Even if you're not up for the challenges that come with international travel right now, our memories of great journeys we've had can stir up our positive endorphins and get us ready to see more of the world as soon as we're able. We've invited a few of our Travel with Rick Steves listeners to share some of their most memorable travel stories with us right now at 877-333-7425. Or by email, we're at radio@ricksteves.com. Larry's calling in from Boston. Hi, Larry.
Hey, Rick. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Where have you been traveling lately?
So my wife and I, in December of 2017, we traveled to Barcelona right in the midst of the Catalonian independence movement, actually shortly right after the Declaration of Independence. And we traveled there, and I wasn't sure what to expect, whether it was going to be tense or if people were going to be sort of on edge. And I was actually pleasantly surprised by how calm and how normal life was when we were there. And we actually ended up being there for about 4 days, and we had really a wonderful time. And you almost wouldn't have known that the independence movement was in the air.
And Larry, just so our listeners understand the context here, of course, recently Catalonia, the northeastern province or district of Spain, has wanted to be independent. And they actually had the nerve to declare their independence, and people were out in the streets, and Spain was confronting that quite strongly. From a distance, people thought, oh, you wouldn't want to travel in Barcelona, which is the capital of Catalonia. But I was there also during that time, and while loved ones might have been anxious for us when they looked at the news, when you were right there, it did feel like a venting of a national pride, and there were people on the streets, but it certainly didn't feel like a dangerous time to be there. Was that your experience?
That was exactly my experience. When you had conversations with people, they certainly were happy to explain what they thought. And mm-hmm. there were certainly a lot of people there who had the Catalonian pride and yep. believed in the independence movement. But people were calm and they were just, they're hospitable.
And it's a complicated issue. And I really appreciate that about travel and people-to-people travel, because whether it's being in Scotland when they might be voting for their independence or not from London, or being in Barcelona when they're wondering, are they going to be part of a country ruled by Madrid or not? The unfortunate thing about these votes is it's all or nothing. It's complete independence or complete non-independence. And almost everybody falls somewhere in the middle, but they have to choose one or the other. When you get a chance to be there, it's so fun to see the fine little gradients of people's position on that complicated issue.
Absolutely.
So when you were in Barcelona, you were able to just do what you want to do in spite of the parades and the demonstrations and streets closed down?
We did, yeah. I mean, we were actually able to walk up past the Plaza de Catalunya, and we saw some peaceful gatherings. But other than that, we were able to visit the Gaudí sites and mm-hmm. take a bike tour of the city and enjoy all the food and the culture. And it was almost like you wouldn't have noticed that there was that sort of political issue happening at the time.
You probably just saw a lot of those yellow and red striped flags of Catalan.
Those were everywhere, hanging from windows. And
Larry,
you could buy T-shirts, I think, too.
Did you notice, Larry, some of those yellow and red striped flags had a triangle with a single star in it?
That was right. A few of them did, or maybe half of them did, had the blue
triangle
on them.
Okay, so you can fly the Catalan flag without saying, we want independence. But if you put the blue star in it, or the blue triangle with the star in it, that's the Cuban flag, or the star from the Cuban flag. And Cuba broke away from Spain with a similar kind of movement for independence. And Catalan people, when they put that Cuban element on their flag, they say, we want to do like the people of Cuba did, to break away from Spain and have our own independence.
Oh, that would make sense. So those are sort of the more vocal...
They're the more extremists on that movement. Yeah. There's a lot of pride. There's a lot of what they call nations without states. When I talk to my Catalonian friends, I say, okay, I'm trying to sort it out. Now, you're a region of Spain. No, we're not a region of Spain. We are a nation without a state. And, people draw borders after wars, and a lot of ethnic groups do not get their own border, and they're just told to make do within that bigger country. And you can't just wish these problems away. These are ethnic Catalans, and they're going to want their autonomy to a certain degree. They're going to want to teach their kids their language and wave their flag. And they've come a long way, but in a lot of their minds, they still have more to go.
Absolutely.
All right. Hey, well, thanks for your call.
Thanks, Rick.
Take care. And Jake's calling in from Bend in Oregon. Hi, Jake.
Hi, Rick. Thanks for taking my call. I have kind of a funny travel story for you. In 2007, my wife and I spent a few weeks in Ireland. And it was late October, so we thought that we'd try to travel with no fixed itinerary. And that worked great until one warm and sunny Saturday when we decided to head down to Kinsale.
Kinsale on the south coast of Ireland, famous for its beautiful cuisine. Very nice town.
Oh, God, it was a beautiful town. We got there mid-afternoon, and the town was packed, even though it was late October. So apparently, a lot of Irelanders thought it would be a good idea, too. So there was not a single accommodation available in town. And so we just headed west along the coast until we got to Clonakilty, and we got there just at sundown. And we were able to find one room, the last room that was available in town. And it was on the second floor of this little old-fashioned hotel, kind of overlooking the little main street that runs through Clonakilty. And when we booked the room, the front desk clerk told me to park the car around the back. And I asked her if I could just leave the car out front. And she said, oh, you'll not be wanting to leave your car out there. Which I thought was kind of funny because, you know, it's a quiet little town. So anyway, we were so tired at this point, we just decided to call it quits and just, you know, have an early night. We fell asleep, and about an hour after that, the music started. And it turned out that there were three pubs within about 50 yards of where our room was. And this was Saturday night, and apparently Clonakilty is a very popular place for young Irish to come and party.
Oh, yeah.
So the music was just roaring from these three pubs, okay? So we were getting no sleep at all. And finally, about 11:30, the music stopped, and the party just came right out from the pubs, right out into the main street. And so about 2:30 in the morning, I got up and I looked out the window, and here the entire main street was just flooded with these young kids just having a blast.
Oh, no.
But it was crazy. They were having so much fun. And finally, about 3:30, the party finally broke up, and then we started to nod off, and about that time, the street sweepers came in and started to sweep up all the broken glass. So finally, at 5:30 in the morning, we just called it quits, got all of our stuff in the car, and just took off and headed for Kenmare. And found a nice, quiet B&B in Kenmare, and the next night we slept for like 14
hours. I bet you slept good the next night. Well, you know, that's just every time I'm in Europe and I end up on a Friday or a Saturday night in the town center, because I like to be in the town center, there is a chance that you're going to be unlucky and surrounded by music that goes until the wee hours. And I don't know, sometimes I just figure, well, I'm not going to get any sleep. I might as well get out and do something. So I stay up past my bedtime and try not to fight it. But it's kind of a thing you want to be extra careful about on Fridays and Saturdays. Europeans love to party. The younger generation's out there till the wee hours. And I hate to be the old guy screaming out the window, shut up, I'm trying to get some sleep, you know. I don't think you want to do that either, but you do want to get some sleep.
Well, the next time I'm going to rest up and join the party. That's what I learned.
I was in Bern, the capital of Switzerland, and it happened to be the annual Buskers Festival. That means all the street musicians, the best street musicians in Europe, inundated the town. There must have been 20 groups performing at the same time all over Bern. And literally right outside my window, there was a bandstand setting up, and I thought, oh, great, I'm not going to get any sleep for a long time tonight. And that was the case where I just had to say, hey, a lot of people travel all the way to Bern in Switzerland to be here for this festival. I was here not to stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning, but I thought, you know, I'm just going to make the best out of this. And I went out there, and I had a great time. I'm so glad I had that attitude. And sometimes you just got to go out there and have a beer and wait till 2 o'clock in the morning.
No doubt. Thanks for what you make of them, right?
Yeah. All right, Jake, hey, thanks for your call, and I hope you have better sleeping next time you go to the south coast of crazy Ireland.
You know what? It was unforgettable, so it was well worth it.
It really is. That's the good attitude. All right, take care.
Thanks a lot.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're learning tips from our listeners, and one thing is, on a Friday and a Saturday, you don't know how noisy it's going to be until after the sun sets and the band starts to play. Kimberly from Pittsburgh and Pennsylvania has written us an email, and Kimberly writes, on my last visit to Paris, I tried a new tactic for dinner. I found a small, very local-heavy bistro. It was near my lodging. The food was very reasonably priced and very good. And so I returned there the following evening and the one after that. Beyond a reliably delicious and budget-friendly meal, I became a regular there. I highly recommend this method, especially for solo travelers who tend to feel more socially isolated in the evenings. You know, Kimberly, thank you for the email. This is a very good point. When you're in a town, it could be a small town or a big city, you have the option to eat at the same place night after night after night. And whereas you could make the case that it's better to go out and have the variety, there's a huge advantage of being a regular. And in Europe, they say you're a guest on the first night and a regular after that. And they'll remember who you are. They'll be joyful to have you back. You'll be able to eat your way through the menu. And if it was a good experience the night before, it's probably a good experience on the next night. So that's a very good tip. And I can think of a lot of places in Paris where I'd love to go night after night. We're enjoying some virtual travels with you, our listeners, right now on Travel with Rick Steves. You can share what stands out from your travels. Our email address is radio@ricksteves.com. Martha's on the line from Shrewsbury in Massachusetts. Martha, thanks for your call.
Thank you for taking it, Rick. I'm delighted to have an opportunity to talk about Paris, my favorite city, and for people to think about doing something that's not just the tourist preparation. And I highly recommend that they go back and read Hemingway's A Movable Feast, which tells that story of the lost generation of Paris and Sylvia Beach Shakespeare and Company bookstore. And you go to Paris with a sense of the people who lived there before and want to be able to walk those streets and hear those stories. And Shakespeare and Company is one of my favorites now. Originally, Sylvia Beach, an American, created it in 1919 en route de Lorient. But she closed it in 1941 because of the German occupation. But during that period of the first half century, she had Hemingway, she published James Joyce's Ulysses, she had D.H. Lawrence, and she supported writers at that period. It was opened up 10 years later by an American ex-serviceman, and that's the story you can go to now on Rue de Boucherie across from Notre Dame. And that is where the Beat Generation went in the 60s, James Baldwin, Allen Ginsberg, on East Nin. And if you go into the bookstore, it seems like this just very small bookstore, but American books. So you can find tour books, you can find your books. But if you just take a little spiral staircase up to the second floor, which is the secret, you can go up to the second floor, and that's when you can sit and take books out that have been perhaps touched by Baldwin or Hemingway. They were the books that were on loan. And it's this amazing secret story of Paris. So I highly recommend it.
You know, that is such a great tip, Martha, and thank you for sharing that. Now, first of all, so people know, this is the funky little ramshackle but filled with ambiance and history bookstore,
yes,
across the river from the Notre Dame, right in the Latin,
yes,
Quarter. It's so exciting to read a book like Hemingway's A Movable Feast and get yourself in the mind frame of a different age, an age that you're fascinated by. And in the 1920s, Paris was just the go-to place for so many great artists, writers, painters, sculptors, philosophers, and so on. And then, as you mentioned, the Beat Generation also in the 60s. And this, the tradition of Sylvia Beach and her bookstore, Shakespeare and Company, was really one that supported struggling writers. And even when I was a student, it was famous for struggling writers to sleep for free upstairs. They would just crash up there and they would house them because they were there, you know, chasing their creative dreams, writing their novel, and they didn't have enough money for a hotel, and the Shakespeare and Company bookstore would house them. And to this day, you have that spirit in there, and it is fun just to drop in whenever you're in Paris, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. It's a different take on Paris.
Yeah.
But most people don't know to go upstairs. So I just recommend everybody walk in, see the wonderful collection, and then walk up that spiral staircase,
yeah,
and go back in time.
So walk in, and then it's an English language bookstore, so it's great if you're looking for a book while you're on the road. And then, as you said, climb that little low-key spiral staircase up to the next floor, and you'll find that sort of trip back in time for a struggling writer in Paris. Thanks,
yes,
Martha, for your call.
Thank you, Rick.
Kirk in Bellingham, Washington, sends us an email about his experience in Germany. Here's what Kirk writes. While it's understandable that first-time American visitors in Germany might be drawn to the West and the South, especially Bavaria, there are so many interesting places in Eastern Germany that Americans just don't appreciate. Our independent travel in the former East Germany included Berlin, Dresden, Potsdam, and the Luther sites of Erfurt, Wartburg Castle, and Wittenberg. There's many lesser-known sites as well in former Eastern Germany. Kirk, you are absolutely right. You know, we Americans tend to go to Bavaria and the Rhineland and so on because that's what we occupied after World War II, and that's where all of our grandfathers and relatives did their time in Europe. And there's a lot more to Germany than that. And when you go to Germany, I think you can remember if you go east, you're going to get away from a lot of the crowds and you're going to find a lot of undiscovered and just wonderful destinations to give Germany an extra dimension. When you do that, understand your medieval history, understand your Renaissance history, and understand your 20th century history, because the big powers, the big cities, the important centers of former communist DDR or Eastern Germany have a fascinating story to tell. What will you never forget about a trip you enjoyed overseas? We'd love to hear about it. You can send us a short email to radio@ricksteves.com. And Patricia's on the line from Bothell, Washington. Hey, Patricia, thanks for your call.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Tell me about your most memorable experience.
Well, the most special one, which was unexpected, was when we walked into the town of Estaing, and there up in the chateau was the man. And he greeted me in Mandarin. He was the ex-president of France. And I think it's going to age me because he was a president in the 60s, along with Pierre Trudeau in Canada.
Oh, yeah.
And so he greeted me in Mandarin because I'm of Asian descent. And
oh, really?
I was going, bonjour, monsieur. You know, I was so excited to see him. And he goes, ni hao.
Oh, my goodness.
And then,
this is
and
Valéry
yeah,
Giscard d'Estaing, the
yes,
president of France
mm-hmm,
back in the 60s yes, or something, yeah.
And he was in his chateau that weekend.
Huh.
And so when I went up and I said, can I have a photo with you? So he said, yes. And, we had a photo together. I still have the photo. It was so exciting. His guard kept saying, okay, enough. But he kept wanting to talk. And then as we left, he goes, sorry, John, would you see you again? I go, wah. And he was going to me in Chinese in Mandarin.
Oh,
so it was a very memorable moment to see him, that he was so friendly, you know.
That's a beautiful moment. And it's a sort of
yeah,
a lesson that, you know, you'll never know who you might meet when you get off the beaten path and you explore
exactly,
these beautiful countries.
Yeah.
All right.
It was a lovely village. And the chateau had all the exhibits of his more memorable occasions of his presidency. So.
All right. Hey, well, thank you for the call, Patricia. Bye now.
Happy to be part of your program.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Nick on Staten Island, New York, emailed us this. My wife and I went on a couples trip to Sicily. It was the first time I drove in Europe. For us, it was a trip to visit all the sights all over Sicily, but also family in Messina. That rental car brought so many misadventures and memories, most of them fond. They inspired me to write about them. These were so many I didn't want to forget. Since it was a driving-related trip, I sent my report to the editor of the regional AAA Northeast website. They wound up publishing it, and I had never had any writings go to public before, so it was a big thrill. Nick, thanks for reporting, and you're right. Driving around Sicily can be kind of a comedy of errors, but as I think you found, I found, if you don't make some bloopers, you're not having a good time. You really got to be able to laugh at your mistakes. Also, it's a great way to get to know and appreciate the friendship of strangers. And anytime you're writing in Europe, whether you're a comedy of errors or if you're an old pro at it, I think it's important to be journaling, to capture those memories while they're fresh. And who knows, you might become a travel writer like Nick is understanding. By the way, we've posted a link to Nick's article about driving in Sicily with this week's show. It's at ricksteves.com/radio.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington by Tim Tatton, Kazmara Hall, and Donna Bardsley. Andrew Wakeling uploads the show to our website, Sheila Gerzoff handles affiliate promotions, and our theme music is by Jerry Frank. Find out when other stations around the country air travel with Rick Steves. There's a list at ricksteves.com/radio.